Welcome to Nelson and your audio guide to the Melrose Garden Walk. We will refer to the site numbers on the Melrose Garden Walk map. Download your map from www.nelsoncitycouncil.co.nz. This walk is one of a series of heritage walks developed by the Nelson City Council. Historic Melrose House is a grand mansion of the late 1800s, designed by John Scotland for Charles Watt, who came to New Zealand in 1841 as a survey cadet for the New Zealand Company. The gardens of the house were extensively developed by Percy Bolland Adams and his wife Frances when they took up residence, and some stunning trees planted in the 1890s still flourish. Much of the information in this guide comes from the Encyclopedia of New Zealand and from the dedicated gardeners employed by Council to maintain and enhance the grounds today. The walk is over gentle sloping lawns and well-formed paths. Comfortable walking shoes are recommended. Our walk starts at the Information Centre in Miller's Acre. You may choose to walk the 15 minutes up the hill to Melrose House from the eyesight, or there is ample parking at the house should you choose to drive. To walk from the eyesight, cross Trafalgar Street at the traffic lights and proceed along Trafalgar Street towards the cathedral on the church hill directly ahead. Walk up the church steps and through the picturesque cathedral grounds and continue up Trafalgar Street south behind the cathedral. Melrose House is on the corner of Brougham Street and has several entrances. Go to the Brougham Street pedestrian entrance. Pause on the street before entering the grounds. The impressive Moreton Bay Fig is best viewed from the street. This specimen was planted in 1890, and this Australian native tree is widely used as a feature tree in public parks and gardens in warmer climates. You will see that this is number one on your map. The Moreton Bay Fig is known as a strangler fig, and seed germination in the wild takes place in the canopy of a host tree, and the seedling lives as an epiphyte until its roots establish contact with the ground. It then enlarges and strangles its host, eventually becoming a freestanding tree by itself. Individual trees can reach 60 metres in height, but one of the largest in New Zealand in Kaipara Harbour, Northland, was under half that when measured in 1984 at 26.5 metres high and 48.5 metres wide. The Moreton Bay Fig is best known for its beautiful buttress roots, which are also known for damaging municipal footpaths. It has male and female flowers and can produce a fruit, which although edible, is unpalatable and dry. Take the pedestrian entry to the right of the tree. A short way up the path to your left, a large evergreen coniferous tree, the Lawson Cypress, can be found, which is number two on your map. This is a native of the lush rainforests of southwest Oregon and northwest California, where it can grow to a height of 54 metres. It was first discovered by Euro-Americans near Port Orford in Oregon and was named Lawson's Cypress by collectors working for the Lawson and Son Nursery in Edinburgh, Scotland, who introduced it into cultivation in 1854. These trees have been widely planted throughout New Zealand since early times. And this is a particularly attractive specimen, being multi-stemmed. It towers to around 30 metres high. Close by on your right, see a stately totara, number 3 on your map, which is a similar age to the Lawson cypress. The Māori prize this forest tree more highly than any other because of the remarkable qualities of its timber. The heartwood is very durable, and the Māori found that wood could be readily split and shaped with primitive stone tools for canoes, building and carving. The very same properties that made it a valuable timber to the first European settlers for house and wharf piles and for those parts of buildings requiring durable members. The tree is a conifer with wide distribution across New Zealand. It can reach a height of around 36.5 metres and has a diameter of up to 2 metres through. Along with the other conifers, in particular rimu, it usually forms the scattered emergent story stretching above the dense canopy of broadleaf trees. It is thought totara were very abundant in New Zealand pre-human habitation and at some time when the climate was milder and wetter. Although few existing forests remained by the time the first Europeans arrived, when early settlers cleared the land for ploughing, many logs were uncovered in the ground around Nelson. Follow the path towards the house. Look to your left and to the base of the lower lawn. A large redwood, number 4 on your map, dominates the garden. By far the tallest tree, towering above everything else. It is an excellent specimen planted around 1890. In its natural habitat of California, these redwoods grow as tall as 110 metres and the average lifespan is 600 years. They can live for over 2,000 years. The bark can grow up to 30 centimetres thick, giving excellent insulation and protection against insects and fire, which are common in their natural habitat. In North America, the timber is widely used for general building purposes because of its high durability and lack of odour. It is imported into New Zealand for joinery and exterior finishing. Timber grown here is not as good a quality as the trees tend to grow more rapidly. This specimen has managed to survive some serious gales, but its small twin fork is watched carefully. Before you, across the semicircle lawn, rises the graceful residence, which is popular for weddings and conferences, and is available for hire. An attractive selection of David Austin Old English roses are found around the base of the house in 3 rose beds. See number 5 on your map. David Austin has been breeding roses in England for over 50 years. In the 1940s, a copy of George Bunyard's book on old roses gave him the idea of crossing old roses with modern roses. The old roses, that is, the Gallicas, the Damasks and the Albas, had all but died out at that time. His objective was to create new roses in the style of old roses, thus combining the unique charm and fragrance of old roses with the wide colour range and repeat flowering qualities of the modern rose. He was also particularly interested in producing well-formed shrubs that would make good garden plants. 2 beds feature a selection of red varieties of rose. The red rose to your right at the corner of the house is called the Dark Lady. A dark crimson rose with fragrant and rather loosely formed flowers which open wide. They have a special character of their own, looking rather like the flowers of tree peonies, and as sometimes seen on fabrics and wallpapers. The name is taken from the so-called Dark Lady of Shakespeare's sonnets. Near the steps to your left is another David Austin red rose called William Shakespeare. The rosette-formed flowers have a rich damask scent, and the velvety crimson blooms develop a hint of purple as they age. Other red roses in the beds are the Squire, Falstaff, L.D. Braithwaite, the Prince, and the exuberant climber, Tess of the D'Urbervilles, clambers up over the veranda. The remaining rose bed has mixed varieties such as the strongly fragrant, creamy white, Fair Bianca, and the salmon pink, English Elegance. Head towards the left side of the house, where a camphor tree, number 6 on your map, from 1890 is planted. The camphor tree is a native of East Asia, mainly China and Japan. The evergreen tree was traditionally used extensively in many East Asian cultures as a source for fragrant incense and wood. The tree has small and fragrant flowers, which are yellow in colour, and oval red berries in season. An oil can be distilled from the leathery leaves. Crush a leaf in your hands to inhale a distinct smell, sure to stir a number of childhood memories. Traditionally, camphor was used as a cure for cold and related illnesses. The affected person wore a little bag or sachet around the neck that contained the camphor crystals. Today, inhalations of the camphor fumes remain a common method of treatment for all afflictions affecting the respiratory system. The analgesic qualities of camphor made it a useful liniment for direct application to treat all sorts of problems like sprains and bruises, gout, rheumatism, and arthritis. Treatment was carried out traditionally by rubbing the oil of camphor into the affected areas of the body. Ingesting the oil of camphor, though, was more dangerous, as it can be toxic. It was tried for problems such as hysteria with unproven results. Today you may find it in cough drops, which use white camphor oil, mainly for fragrance. And in this form, the oil is not toxic, as the poison substance has been removed and it is quite safe for consumption. In the old days, fragrant camphor wood was used in the manufacture of sailors' chests. The wood of the camphor is both durable and strong. It is very resistant to the corrosive ravages of salt air and water, and the fragrant wood acts as a repellent to clothes moths. And the wood itself is immune to the majority of wood-boring insects. Camphor glory boxes were used by generations of women to store bed linen, bridal trousseau, baby clothes and woolens. Due to the commercial value of the tree today, the wood has become prohibitively expensive. And while it is possible to obtain sufficient wood of the camphor to make a moth-proof chest, it may not come cheap. Today, many different commercial products are obtained from the camphor, products such as insecticides, deodorants, disinfectants, explosives, paint solvents, natural perfumes, and soaps. Other plants don't usually grow near or under a camphor tree. However, surprisingly close by is a persimmon tree, which is number 7 on your map. This is estimated to be about 70 years old. It bears a delicious orange-skinned fruit in early autumn, much loved by both possums and people who race to get to them first. Its genus, Diospyros, means the fruit of the gods in ancient Greek. Very apt, and if you haven't tried the fruit, then try to do so. The season is short, and the fruit needs to be ripe to reach its full flavour quotient. The tree has an attractive form, with a central straight trunk and extraordinarily angled branches. As it is part of the ebony wood family, the wood is black and hard. Walk up behind these two trees onto the lawn to the land at the back of the house, which is likely to have been the orchard in earlier times. A few old fruit trees remain and have been added to with recent plantings by the council, along with azaleas, camellias and natives such as Totara and Karaka. Continue to walk behind the house until you see the driveway and separate garages ahead of you. Near where you join the drive is a well-established puriri, which is number 8 on your map. Notice its pretty salmon pink flowers. The Māori used infusions from boiled puriri leaves to bathe sprains and backache, and as a remedy for ulcers and sore throats. The infusion was also used to wash the body of the deceased to help preserve it. Puriri trees and groves were often tapu through their use as burial sites, and puriri leaves were fashioned into coronets or carried in the hand during a tangi, which is a funeral. Puriri timber was often used for implements and structures requiring strength and durability. The Māori preferred other timbers to puriri as its cross grain made it difficult for carving, but puriri garden tools and weapons had a long life, and legend has it that buckshot used to ricochet off puriri palisades. It was used to make hinaki, which are eel traps, because it was one of the few timbers that would sink. The puriri provides the strongest wood in New Zealand, and such things as bridges and paddles are made from it. Puriri was first collected at Tolaga Bay by botanists Banks and Solander during Captain Cook's first visit in 1769. Solander, besides describing the tree excellently, made a beautiful drawing of it. The tree was also called by the English New Zealand mahogany or New Zealand teak in the past, particularly when they were writing things about timber. Puriri is an invaluable food source for native wildlife, as it provides both fruit and nectar in the seasons when few other species produce these. It is often used in restoration planting and is highly valued as an aid in increasing kereru, our native pigeon, populations. The puriri moth, or ghost moth, is New Zealand's largest moth and is quite spectacular, with a potential wingspan of up to 15 centimetres. It is hosted by the puriri tree. Sadly, the moths are much reduced in number these days from the great swarms reported by early settlers as invading rooms sufficient in number to extinguish lighted lamps. This must have been pretty exciting. Cross the drive to reach the main lawn. On the left side of the lawn, past new rhododendron plantings and adjacent to some New Zealand native trees, totoki and the golden-flowered kowhai, is a large common lime tree, which is number 9 on your map. The name is somewhat of a misnomer, as it is not a citrus tree. This one is a hybrid, Tilia cross Europea, and it stands about 12 to 14 metres high. The common lime is so called as it was one of the most common trees in Europe, and it was very fashionable to plant in Victoria times, as a reminder of the old country, or perhaps the Grand Tour. Hyacinths and daffodils planted at its base flower in the spring. A small woodland path invites you to enter into a dell. At its entry, somewhat obscured by other smaller trees, is a large magnolia, number 10 on your map. Magnolia grandiflora, commonly known as the southern magnolia or Bull Bay, is native to the southeastern United States. It is a very popular ornamental tree, grown for its attractive shiny green leaves and large white fragrant flowers. Continue on the pathway through native bush, generally marked as number 11 on your map. Karaka are very noticeable in the woodland here, particularly in the autumn, when their berries ripen from green through yellow to a beautiful red. Pulp of the karaka fruit is edible, although bitter, but the fresh kernels contain the lethal alkaloid poison karakin. Accounts from the 19th century record that extensive processing was used by Maori to convert the kernels into an edible form, and mention that if the processing was not done with the greatest of care, poisoning would result, with symptoms including violent convulsions and severe muscle spasms, which could leave the limbs permanently fixed in contorted positions. Death resulted in some cases. The karaka tree, whose berries are a source of food, is thought to have been brought to New Zealand on the Kurahaupo canoe. Karaka is widespread in mainly coastal situations. Most botanists accept it as native only in the northern half of the North Island, although the original distribution is unclear because of widespread planting by Maori. When found in numbers like this, concentrated in an area as it is in this part of the garden, it often denotes previous Maori occupation of an area. This is logical in this case, as Maori would have lived in Pa on Piki Mai, also known as Church Hill, where the cathedral now stands. Enjoy the song of native birds and wander through the small fernery and along the boardwalk and path to return you to the Brougham Street Gate. We have now completed our walk. To return to the information centre and the starting point, retrace your steps along Brougham Street and turn right into Trafalgar Street South. The cathedral on Church Hill can be seen ahead. Go through the grounds to Lower Trafalgar Street, and the Civic House clock tower is clearly visible, and you will find the eyesight is diagonally opposite. We hope you have enjoyed the Melrose Garden Walk. Other walks in this area include the Dress Circle Walk, which introduces you to some history around the houses in the area. For more heritage trails around Nelson, go to the Nelson City Council website, www.nelsoncitycouncil.co.nz, and use the search phrase Heritage Walks. Or you can contact the Arts and Heritage Team Leader at the Council. For information about hiring Melrose House, go to www.melrosehouse.co.nz.